It is 20 minutes after the hour, that hour being 8 o'clock a.m. in the Central Time Zone of Central Texas, also the time up there in East Dakota where David is, also the time where Dr. Don Clark happens to be in Garden Valley, Texas. Don, a biochemist and a vigneron, that means he has a grape branch there down there in Texas, and also a board member with Creation Moments. And Don, good morning. How are things on the grape branch this morning?
Hmm? Oh, well, we had we have frost on the ground this morning. got down to 29, maybe even a little lower. So things are cold.
Yeah, well,
at the moment, but the temperature is expected to rise to about 60, so we're going to have a wide shift in temperature perhaps today.
Yeah, those vines will thaw.
I stopped completely above my 12 degrees.
David, we've lost your audio there. You're coming through like a goat in the fog.
I stopped completely above my 12 degrees.
It's not good. Not good. It sounds like you're just totally garbled. Sounds like we're listening to your thoughts, not your voice. Better just turn that mic off and you can maybe reconnect or something. See if we can do that, because we got lots to talk about. Dr. Don Clark is here. We're going to talk. We've talked many times about DNA, but never have we talked about nucleotide diversity, or maybe we have using other terms. What does that term mean?
Well, it's just a measure of it's basically a measure of mutation, number of mutations over a given period of time. So the hypothesis is that nucleotide diversity is equal to 2 times the mutation rate times time. Especially, you know, you're comparing, let's say, 2 different nucleotide sequences, one from, you know, one species and one from another species, and you're trying to figure out, let's say, whether or not the nucleotide diversity is the same between the two species, or they're different.
So it's a rate of change, which means that, first of all, I didn't know that DNA changed. Why?
Well, it's a rate of mutation.
Mm-hmm. Well, mutation has changed.
It's not the rate of mutation, because that's the that's in the formula. That is, the mutation rate is in the formula, and it's multiplied by the time to they're trying to find out basically how long ago was the ancestor of a particular species, for example, in this particular article that we're
The rate of change would be common to a species, or would it be the same across all species? Because we've talked about how DNA mutates, it degrades over time.
Right, it degrades over time. And the mutation rate is not common. I mean, it's not consistent between species and species.
Okay.
So this technique actually takes out that variability between species and then allows you to compare, how much time, for example, when was the time of the first ancestor? When did that happen?
So, because you have a rate going forward, you have a rate going backward too. I mean, you can study that rate and like subtract the time it would take to make changes and estimate what the DNA would be like for a member of a species centuries ago or eons ago.
Well, your assumption in this case is that the DNA was perfect some time ago, and over time, you know, it developed some mutations. You can measure, we can get at least a guess of the mutation rate that's, you know, been happening today or more recent time, and then you can project back and say, okay, when did all of this start?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're looking at.
Well, this article began with a research paper And it was printed in Evolution News and Science Today, and then it was carried forward to the New York Daily News, and then to American Action News. And I'm going back to the original article in Evolution News and Science Today, and it defines nuclear diversity as the average number of differences per site between two aligned nucleotide sequences. That's gobbledygook to me. So I'll let you explain, and I think you just did. So at least theoretically, we can take a look at a person's DNA now, or and assume it's representative of the species, and work the clock backwards until a time when we think the DNA was in its original state, and measure that time. Okay.
Right. So the diversity, it's kind of an average diversity between the two.
And I would suspect also that
you're looking at.
I also suspect this has something to do with the gestation rate by species, because if it's not the same from creature to creature to creature, that would be one of the big variables. I mean, if some critter can reproduce a new generation in 60 days or 90 days or however often that happens. Man's gestation period is 9 months. That must be a factor in the calculation somehow.
Well, and how how often the reproduction is. So, in other words,
so that would give you the number of generations, the number of generations as well.
Well, it could. Well, yeah, they didn't quite go that far, but for example, how long it takes for a generation.
Mm-hmm.
With man, if it's about 40 years, then with a mouse it's a lot shorter than that.
Sure.
So or a rabbit, it's certainly a lot shorter than that. So between the mutation rate, which one would anticipate that the mutation rate for an animal that, let's say, multiplies quickly and its generation is relatively short, you'd expect the mutation rate to be higher in that species than, let's say, for man or for an elephant, which, takes a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Its generation is a long time. So this way of calculating the nucleotide diversity, and more importantly, when do we think all of this started, per species, if you will, is an interesting, it's an interesting study. Now, it's, again, we're looking back and we're trying to look back in time from the data that we have today, and there's a lot of assumptions in this type of study, but the results were, according to the authors, totally unexpected. And one author actually said at some point he fought against it as hard as he could.
Mm-hmm. Thought that was an interesting statement, yeah.
Until he said, well, I guess this is the data, and we'll, like most research, we'll have to do more research. But what they found was at least 90% of the species, at least 90% of the species that they looked at. I'm sure they didn't look at all of the species, but at least 90% of the species said, all of these species started at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a problem. We think. Oh, but we could explain that. Yes. Okay. It started at the same time, and you could explain it by two explanations. One explanation is everything was created at the same time. Oh, but we don't like that. So the other explanation is there had to be some cataclysm that happened at the same time, and therefore everything that we're looking at today is a result of that cataclysm. And that everything started again at the same time because of the cataclysm. It's not that everything started at the same time, but it's everything started at the cataclysm.
One or the other, or both.
Well, and the truth of the matter is that it's both.
Hmm.
Because everything did start at the same time, which, of course, was the creation. I mean, within a day or two.
Close enough for government work, yeah.
because the birds and the sea creatures were created on day five, and the animals, the beast of the field, and all the creepy things were created on day six, and man, the pinnacle of God's creation here on earth, was created on day six. So, relatively speaking, we could say that everything was created on the same time. But at the same, but again, you know, you're talking about a cataclysmic event. Well, the Bible points to that as well, which we know. It, you know, was the flood in Noah's day. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily Noah's flood, but Noah didn't cause the flood. But the flood in Noah's day is the global cataclysm that, you know, these folks may have actually discovered by accident. Oops. So in both cases, in both explanations, you have the truth of the Bible coming out, and if they would just read Genesis, they would figure out that, you know what, we just discovered that this data actually corroborates what the Bible says.
Now, there's a couple of numbers I'm looking at in the first paragraph of this reprinted article. And I'll read it to you, and let's focus on that for a second. By scouring millions of mitochondrial genetic marker barcodes, scientists have found evidence that all 100 billion humans that have ever lived descended from one set of parents who had intercourse between 100,000 and 200,000 years ago. That's a long time.
It's a long time, but it's not the millions of years ago that, you know, we were being told before. And, yeah, evolutionists always get the time scale wrong because of all of the assumption that goes into, you know, their timeline. And we've talked about some of them before with the radio dating and of rocks and the rock layers being dated incorrectly. Instead of saying that these rock layers were formed at the time of the flood, they say, well, each rock layer was laid down, you know, millions of years from one another. And then finally we get a burst of life here in this particular layer. And then different things start happening from that. So I'm not surprised that their time frame is off. And again, you know, they're extrapolating backwards from the mutation rates that we have, you know, today, and making some assumptions about those mutation rates. And whenever you take the data from today and you extrapolate backwards, you often get longer dates than you really should, because, you know, you're assuming that everything is constant over that time period. So over the 100 to 200,000 years ago, they're assuming that the mutation rate has been constant all throughout that time. But if the Earth has experienced cataclysms, which we know, of course, from the Great Flood, that there was a very cataclysmic event at that time, the Earth is not the same as it was in the past, in that things have settled down over the, you know, since the time of the flood. And we think, you know, the time of the flood was more like 100 years ago, or maybe no longer than that. Let me see. Let's say 4,000 or 5,000 years ago compared to, hundreds of thousands of years ago. Then, you know, if the Earth was changing very rapidly during that period of time, then things could have changed very rapidly as well, including the mutation rates.
And you bring up a point that we need to take note of here, and that is both evolution and our view of the Bible depend on certain assumptions. And what we're saying is the evolutionary assumptions are flawed. That we can that both camps can look at the same data and arrive at different conclusions, but they have to dispute the assumptions on either side. And in the case of evolution, they simply refuse to consider the assumption of biblical validity, which would, it seems to me, advance their theories tremendously. If they would simply look at the whole picture, a lot of their data would click into place, would it not? I mean, what I'm saying is the assumptions from the biblical point of view seem to be a lot more sound than the assumptions from the evolutionary point of view, which are based upon, ultimately, wild guesses.
Well, yeah, they're assuming, obviously, that we evolved over a period of time, and that period of time was a long period of time, because, you know, we're fairly complex, and the complexity had to build up over time, which is, of course, nonsense. It doesn't support the data. But at the same time, you know, the most interesting thing about this article is that these folks are evolutionists. And they weren't looking for an explanation for the Bible, from the biblical record, for example, of how we got here and how all the species got here. They were just doing a research study to try, I would imagine, since the language this fellow is so strong, to try to disprove that everything started at the same place. But their final conclusions had to be, even with this crude study, even, you know, had to be that, hey, everything seems to have started about the same time. And we find that very, very hard to believe, but we have to believe it because this is the way the data is pointing. So even when you start off trying to, you know, prove your point of view, which is wrong, you wind up coming to the right point of view, even though your time frame is off, you know, that supports the biblical record here.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, that's the most startling thing about these findings. And this happens, this is beginning to happen more and more often. The more we look, of course, we have the tools now. We have the tools to compare, you know, mutation rates, and we have the tools to look at nucleotide diversity, you know, with the genetic mapping and all of this other stuff that we didn't have before. So now we're getting down to the nitty-gritty of life, and we're finding the story that it's saying is not that all of these animals came into being at different times in history, but in fact that they seem to have all come into being about this at the same time, which completely negates the evolutionary story.
I'm going back to the article on Evolution News and Science Today, and this is the way they read the conclusion. An exciting new paper, and by the way, this article is dated June of this year, June the 8th of 2018. An exciting new paper in the journal Human Evolution has been published, which you can read here. There's a link to it. Popular science reports such as this have been cautiously claimed. They found out that 9 out of 10 animal species on the planet came to being at the same time as humans did some 100,000 to 200,000 years ago. And they ask, could it be that animals were designed together with humans and instantiated, there's a new word to me, instantiated at the same time too, or did they get off the same spaceship or off the same boat? Mm-hmm. Interesting thought there. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, they're getting closer, and it'd be interesting, you know, at some point in time that enough research is done and enough people are convinced that, hey, you know, the most credible explanation for all of this is the biblical explanation, and all of this data that we're discovering is pointing in that direction. So I guess there was a creator God after all.
Mm.
Well, that would be the best.
Well, let me ask this then. This would be an earth-shaking find in legitimate science. So how come it's not being trumpeted from the rooftops?
Well, I found article after article. I mean, at least popular, you know, news articles were passing this information on. Now, I don't know if it would hit the... my news sources are more conservative
Well, that's true.
The,
yeah.
than the very liberal news sources. So this story may have been buried in the liberal news sources. I don't know. I don't know if it was talked about.
It was picked up by the New York Daily News, which has a conservative bent. I don't know that I'd call it a conservative journal, but it's kind of leaning that way. And then, of course, this article from American Action News stems from an organization that is based in Washington and centered on promoting center-right public policy. It seems to be a perfectly valid, it's not a nutcase kind of organization at all, but do a lot of good work. So I tend to give it some credence, and why it's not picked up by the national TV networks, it can only be explained because it's too conservative. It can't have the ring of truth, it seems, unless it fits the liberal pattern, which is something we talk about on the station frequently. And it's dismaying, but this word needs to get out. So I'm glad that you could help us today and help us get the word out on this study. And we'll have some links in the podcast to the actual article. So once we get the podcast posted at brokenroadradio.com, we'll be able to lead you to the article. You can take a look and kind of research for yourself there. Dr. Don Clark is a member of the board of Creation Moments. I want to mention their website to you. It's creationmoments.com. And it contains a wealth of information, scientific information, that supports the biblical story of creation. And that's what makes it so valuable. There are not many places around where you can go find science. You can find all kinds of opinions and rants and raves, but finding scientific information is a bit of a trick. Creation Moments does that for you at creationmoments.com. Don, thank you so much for joining us today. Always appreciate your Tuesday visits. We'll look forward to next week.
Okay, very good. And you folks have a great rest of the week.
We'll do that. Take care.